Chapter 9 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, J.K. Rowling writes of her character's school life, "History of magic was the dullest subject on their timetable. Professor Binns, who taught it, was their only ghost teacher. Ancient and shriveled, many people said he hadn't noticed he was dead. He opened his notes and began to read in a flat drone like an old vacuum cleaner, until everyone in the class was in a deep stupor." Like so many others, the Harry Potter books are inextricably woven into my childhood and teenage years, and since they first appeared, I've devoured the stories, audiobooks, and movies countless times. But whenever I read those lines, I'm always struck by a pang of disappointment. They seem to reinforce the stereotype of history as a mind-numbingly boring and irrelevant academic subject, the domain of pompous, stuffy, and in this case, deceased old men. But to believe so is ungenerous, because the Harry Potter universe is positively brimming with parallels to 20th century history, particularly that of Nazi Germany before World War II. So, to close season one, I offer you a whistle-stop tour of the megalomaniac leadership, fascist ideology, and totalitarian methods of control from history, which are mirrored in the story of Harry and Hogwarts. A quick disclaimer. These are purely my personal interpretations. Welcome to The Timely Historian with me, Simone Bellani. Episode 10, Mudbloods and Mischlinger. The first and most striking point of comparison between 1930s Germany and the Harry Potter universe is the prevailing ideology of blood status. In the magical world, distinctions are made between purebloods, half-bloods, and muggle-borns who are disparagingly labelled mudbloods. And so it was in the Third Reich, where blonde-haired and blue-eyed Aryans topped the human hierarchy, followed by Mischlinger, or mixedlings, whose blood was supposedly contaminated by that of one or two Jewish grandparents, and then Jews, whose blood polluted and poisoned the German folk, according to Nazi logic. And then there are the sub-wizard groups, like the outsider goblins, so-called half-breeds like centaurs, and enslaved beings like house elves. They roughly correspond to groups which the Nazis vilified as Untermenschen. These subhuman groups included the physically disabled, the mentally unwell, homosexuals, and Roma or Sinti peoples. These parallels have been pointed out by J.K. Rowling herself, who stated, "The expressions pureblood, half-blood, and muggle-born have been coined by people to whom these distinctions matter and express their originators' prejudices. If you think this is far-fetched, look at some of the real charts the Nazis used to show what constituted Aryan or Jewish blood. I saw one in the Holocaust Museum in Washington and was chilled to see that the Nazis used precisely the same warped logic as the Death Eaters." Secondly, it's possible to make connections between some of Rowling's main characters and key figures of the Nazi regime. Voldemort, originally Tom Riddle, and Hitler both had troubled childhoods marked by loss and loneliness. Voldemort languished in an orphanage, while Hitler's teenage years were spent homeless and hungry on the streets of Vienna. They both grew bitter and resentful, seeing themselves as outsiders, their hatreds festering over time. And in searching for a framework of ideas in which to believe and to expound, they both looked to extremist dogmas of the past. Voldemort followed in the footsteps of Salazar Slytherin and Gellert Grindelwald, while Hitler tapped into centuries-old European antisemitism. Therefore, while both Voldemort and Hitler proved to be charismatic leaders, capable of inspiring unshakable loyalty in their underlings, there's an element of hypocrisy to their fanaticism. Voldemort had a Muggle father, and so wasn't a pureblood himself, much as Hitler didn't possess the physical features prerequisite for an Aryan. Their inner circles have similar compositions too. There are die-hard Death Eaters like Bellatrix Lestrange similar to wholly committed Nazis like Joseph Goebbels. More self-interested, pragmatic supporters like the Malfoys are reminiscent of the likes of Hermann Göring and Albert Speer. And grovelling, fearful followers like Peter Pettigrew mirror individuals like Rudolf Hess. And the characters on the opposing side echo prominent British politicians in the years preceding World War II as well. For example, comparisons have been made between Albus Dumbledore and Winston Churchill, who were both keen to acknowledge and confront the threat of fascism directly, and between Cornelius Fudge and Neville Chamberlain, who by contrast attempted to appease the menace in the vain hope of averting an all-out war. And thirdly, there are links between the methods used by the Death Eaters and the Nazis to gain and maintain totalitarian control over their populations. Basic freedoms of speech, private communication, and assembly are dispensed with. Both regimes used visually powerful symbols to forge a sense of uniformity and fidelity. The most dedicated Death Eaters are branded with the Dark Mark, and the most committed Nazis wore armbands bearing the swastika. Both Nazis and Death Eaters pumped out endless propaganda and strictly controlled the media and what other information could be accessed by ordinary people. For instance, from March 1933, the Nazis infamously organised public book burnings of works by supposedly degenerate writers like communists, pacifists, and Jews. In Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, a legal decree is likewise passed banning any literature produced by non-wizards or so-called half-breeds. Both regimes manipulated children by distorting education. The Nazis, for example, rewrote the curriculum to incorporate pseudosciences like race studies and restricted free time by making membership of the Hitler Youth or the League of German Maidens compulsory. At Hogwarts, Professor Umbridge also introduces a heavily censored Defence Against the Dark Arts syllabus and forbids all leisure activities like playing music, riding brooms, or forming student societies. And of course, as time goes on, both regimes increasingly used threats, violence, incarceration, torture, and execution to persecute those they perceived as undesirables and to silence their opponents. Therefore, the pervading atmosphere was one of terror. In Germany, fear of the brutal black-shirted SS, and in the wizarding world, fear of the sinister and soulless dementors. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Those words, widely attributed to the 18th century political thinker Edmund Burke, perfectly capture one of the hallmarks of almost all 20th century totalitarian regimes. That is, the widespread turning of blind eyes to what begins as informal discrimination and eventually leads to codified persecution and then atrocity against one or more targeted groups carried out by the state. One of the most perplexing aspects of Hitler's Germany, both to study and to teach, is the relative absence of organised and effective opposition to even the most appalling Nazi policies. The possible explanations are myriad. People stayed silent because they weren't aware of what was happening, because they felt powerless to act or feared reprisals, because they tacitly supported the regime or had been indoctrinated to do so. That means that in Nazi Germany, some of the most noteworthy opposition came from rebellious groups of students, like the Edelweiss Pirates and the White Rose. And it's the same in the Harry Potter universe. For so much of the series, the threat posed by Voldemort is widely denied or ignored, and it comes down to a band of teenagers to fight and defeat him. And so some of the lessons of the Harry Potter saga are the same as that of the history of totalitarian regimes. No act of intolerance is ever small enough to dismiss as insignificant, and no one is ever too small to challenge it. Spotlight on sources. I can't wrap up any discussion of 20th century totalitarianism without recommending the writings of one of the most spectacular thinkers on the subject, Hannah Arendt. She was born into a German-Jewish family in 1906 and fled from the Nazis in 1933, living in France and later the USA. She's best known for her work of 1951, The Origins of Totalitarianism, in which she explores the conditions which gave rise to the dictatorships of both Hitler and Stalin. But the work which has had the most profound impact on me personally is her unflinching report on the trial of Adolf Eichmann, an SS official and one of the architects of the Holocaust, in Israel in the early 1960s. In it, she coined the phrase the banality of evil, very controversially arguing that it was thoughtlessness, an eagerness to follow instructions and orders efficiently without grappling with the moral implications, and not simply inherent wickedness, which led Eichmann and so many others to participate in genocide. It's impossible for me to do her work justice in a few sentences, but I wholeheartedly recommend picking up a copy of Eichmann in Jerusalem for yourself. Mikhail Lubansky, a professor of psychology at the University of Illinois, has also used Arendt's writing to inform his analysis of evil in the Harry Potter series. Links to both writers' works are in the show notes. That brings me to the end of this episode and season. Thank you to everyone who's listened, shared, and got in touch with me. I'll be back in a few weeks' time. Until then, if you have any questions, feedback, or ideas for topics you'd like covered in future episodes, please let me know. You can find me at The Timely Historian on Instagram. Thank you again, and see you soon.